Good afternoon. This is Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for August of 2022. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it will be of interest to everyone. August is the only month of the year without a national holiday, but we have a number of days to observe. The United States Coast Guard was established on the 4th in 1790. The Purple Heart Medal was established on the 7th in 1782. The 14th is National Navajo Code Talkers Day. The 16th is National Airborne Day. The 19th is National Aviation Day. And on the 26th, we observe Women's Equality Day. For a month with no big national holidays, August has several to observe. War and weather are imperiling global food supplies, according to U.S. Department of Agriculture officials and food company executives, as rising food prices drive shortages and protests around the world. The pressures are playing out this year as conflicts in Eastern Europe disrupts exports from Ukraine, one of the world's top crop producers, and drought and poor weather afflict major crop-growing regions. We've actually got two crises, says Eric Fearwald, the CEO of pesticide and crop seed maker Syngenta, the food security crisis and the climate crisis. He said weather extremes are growing, with heat, drought, or flooding challenging farmers in the United States, Europe, Australia, and India. And that's been made worse by Russia's war in Ukraine, which has upended the world grain markets and pushed up food prices across the world. Rising food prices are prompting unrest as disruptions in the flow of crops from the Ukraine compound existing stress on global supplies of grains and other goods. The head of the United Nations World Food Program has warned of outright food shortages are possible in 2023 if Russia continues to block Ukraine's crop exports. Even among the world's wealthiest countries, higher food prices have been taking a toll. U.S. grocery prices in May rose to 12% over the last 12 months. It's very serious, Mr. Freiwald said. Food prices will keep going up until and unless we can get product out through the Black Sea in the south of Ukraine. Ukraine's global wheat exports, which along with Russia account for nearly one-third of the global total, are projected to be cut in half this year, according to the USDA. Russia's invasion helped drive wheat prices to record levels. This is just not going to be enough supply of certain ingredients, said Florian Schatterman, the chief technology officer for the agricultural giant Cargill. The war in Ukraine has strained availability of ingredients such as sunflower oil used in baby formula, spurring companies to reformulate their products, he added. Poor weather growing in South America is straining farming regions that have grown more important to maintaining world food supplies given the Ukrainian conflict. In this country, wet and windy conditions in the Midwest slowed planting for many corn and soybean farmers. The USDA in June projected global wheat exports would be 2.6% for the coming crop year, while the International Grains Council also forecasted a modest gain. Perhaps this article will help us understand what forces are responsible for some of the higher prices at the grocery store. Possibly you have other pains beside the one in your wallet. Does this describe you? Patients experience an achy, heavy feeling or a burning sensation in their legs, may be feeling the symptoms of varicose veins. These twisted, enlarged veins often develop as people age, but they can also begin when people are younger. Any vein that's close to the skin surface, called a superficial vein, can become a varicose vein. For most people, varicose veins simply are a cosmetic concern, said Dr. Christopher Harris, a general and vascular surgeon at the Mayo Clinic. But for others, varicose veins may lead to more serious health issues such as significant life-limiting ulcers or blood clots. He says symptoms of varicose veins include muscle cramping and swelling in the lower limbs, worsening pain after sitting or standing for a long time, itching, pain, or heat around one or more veins, skin ulcers near the ankle. Varicose veins are usually dark purple or blue in color, and they tend to appear twisted or bulged. Exercising, limited sodium intake, losing weight, and elevating legs are some self-care options to stop varicose veins from worsening, explains Dr. Haras. Purchasing compression stockings often is the first approach from the health care team will suggest before trying other treatment options. Compression stockings can be worn during the day to improve blood flow in the legs and reduce swelling and aching. If these self-care options don't ease the pain, the options usually have some type of surgery. The negative side of the compression hosiery is the difficulty in putting them on. Don't let that defeat you. From time to time, we've shared with you the columns of B. Wilson, whose writings appear in the Wall Street Journal under the title Table Talk. Today, she gives us a history lesson about garlic. It begins, "There's more than one way to love a bulb of garlic. You can love it full throttle, as in Spain, where aloja, a mayonnaise-like sauce, may contain enough raw garlic to slay a vampire. Or you can love garlic like a faithful spouse you take for granted, as in China, the source of more than 70% of the world's garlic, where mountains of garlic are simply one of the basic seasonings of everyday life. It's also possible to love garlic in a more timid way, like a bashful lover. Italy is sometimes so alive to the power of garlic that a single clove may be warmed in oil until barely golden and then removed, leaving its perfume behind. However you love it, and I'm assuming you do, garlic is in our lives to stay and available to be enjoyed in 100 different ways. The freshest garlic are the green scrapes of spring, young garlic with tender leaves, but summer garlic is hard to beat. Whether purple or white, new summer bulbs are firmer outside and juicier inside than bulbs that have been stored since winter, when the bulbs can be disappointingly shriveled and waxy. As the Italian-American cookery writer Marcella Hazen wrote, with some garlic, the flavor is so sweet that one can be careless about quantity. When opening a lovely summer bulb and separating up the papery cloves, I sometimes pinch myself with gratitude, remembering how recently it was that garlic was shunned from the kitchens in the Anglo-Saxon world. How boring food must have been in the absence of garlic. Imagine life with no hummus, no garlic bread, no bok choy with garlic, and no chicken braised with garlic. Garlics, the word used by the French, are better adapted to the uses of medicine and cookery. Such was the opinion of Amelia Simmons in American Cookery, the first cookbook that we know of written by an American, published in 1796. Miss Simmons wasn't alone in this view. I went in search of garlic in American cookbooks of the 19th century, and for the most part, I drew a giant blank, except in home remedies. Garlic was used to cure everything from the common cold to the earache. A book from 1823 recommended sticking a whole clove in your ear and as a paste to deter head lice, but it was used very little in American cooking, except in a few recipes for flavored vinegars and pickles. In 1884, the French chef Pierre Blot lamented the American prejudice against garlic, writing that they dislike them on account of their pungent taste when eaten raw, not knowing that when cooked, it is all evaporated and gives such a good flavor in gravies and sauces. It took a long, amazing time for the prejudice against garlic to die in Anglo-Saxon cooking. In 1944, George L. Orwell notes that the British working class regards things as garlic and olive oil as disgusting. In the United States, the term garlic eater was a slur against immigrant Italian immigrants in the early 20th century. In Canada, the politician David Crombie recalled in an interview that before the 1970s, garlic was available in only one specific market in Toronto. For the first half of the 20th century, most American cookbooks suggested garlic to be used only with extreme care. In Marion Harlan's Complete Cookbook in 1903, several recipes, such as one cream cucumber sauce, involved taking a clove of garlic and rubbing it around the serving bowl before removing it. This habit of rubbing bowls with garlic enraged British food writer Elizabeth David, a staunch garlic lover. In her 1955 book, Summer Cooking, that the question of whether rubbing the salad bowl with garlic was enough to get flavor depends on whether you're going to eat the salad or the bowl. Mrs. David was one of the generation of food writers who encouraged British cooks to imitate the French and be braver about garlic. Millions of Americans converted to garlic between the 1970s and the 1990s. From 1975 to 1994, U.S. production of garlic more than tripled, from 140 million pounds to 493 million pounds. This was largely thanks to an effort of a California garlic farmer named Don Christopher, who helped establish the annual Garlic Festival in Gilroy in 1979, attracting huge numbers of visitors and leading to many more garlic recipes in newspapers. Garlic is one of the essential elements in the transformation of American cooking that took place in the 70s and 80s. Alice Waters, the co-founder of Chez Panisse restaurant in Berkeley, was so enamored with garlic that she renamed July 14th, celebrated in France as Bastille Day in France, as Garlic Day. More than anyone else, Miss Waters spread the word about the sweet, earthy charm of garlic, whole roasted in the oven. On one of the driving trips I took around the country when I was much younger, I visited Gilroy. It was not at the festival, but must have been just past the harvest time. I'm not exaggerating. You could smell garlic 10 miles before we got to Gilroy. And there were markets there selling 16-pound boxes of garlic. It was one of those days I'll never forget. Now back to Bee's story. For several years, I had stupidly forgot about roast garlic, having relegated it to the food of the 90s, along sun-dried tomatoes, another wrongly maligned ingredient. But my word, roasted garlic is good. The sticky, sweet flesh squeezed from the clove like toothpaste from a tube will enhance almost anything from risotto to a salad dressing. My favorite recipe of the summer comes from a new cook by Jose Pizarro titled The Spanish Home Kitchen. It's a take on Mr. Pizarro's mother's garlic soup made from two whole bulbs of roasted garlic simmered in fried breadcrumbs, a little smoked paprika, and vegetable stock. At the end, you add milk and serve with toast floating with green olives and manchego cheese. This sweet garlicky broth has some of the comfort of French onion soup, but it's lighter. So what to do if you love the taste of garlic but fear causing offense because of garlic breath? It was said that in 1330, the king of Castile so disliked the smell of garlic that he laid down an order that knights who had eaten garlic couldn't appear in court for a month. My favorite solution to the problem, other than choosing fresh mint or parsley leaves, come from someone I knew in my student day. At any time she ate garlic for lunch, she phoned her boyfriend and urgently requested that he eat some garlic too. Garlic kisses are only offensive when they're one-sided. Thank you, Bee, for your thoughts about garlic. In late June, we learned that a Charlotte bodega, my dictionary defines a bodega as a combination of wine and grocery store brand, is expanding to the Triangle, starting a new location just off of Durham's 9th Street. The Common Market started in Charlotte in 2002, and over the years has grown to four locations, including one across the South Carolina border in Rock Hill. They're looking to Durham for its fifth operation, opening at 1821 Green Street on a lock between 9th and Broad Street. The company bought the property in March of 2021 for $860,000. Raleigh native Graham Worth is leading Common Markets Triangle expansion. It's a hybrid mix of bottle shop, wine shop, and deli all in one, Mr. Worth said. All the markets are built around the communities we serve. They all have a unique and eclectic environment. They're all very funky and artfully put together. The Durham Colony Common Market will move into a former office building. Construction is underway, adding a basement bar, outdoor seating, and a butterfly roof with skylights. Using the model of the New York bodega as an example, Mr. Worth said, Common Market aims to be an all-day room of requirement, stocking craft beers, snacks, and a sandwich counter with everything made in-house. The brand is looking to partner with local vendors to handle Common Market's coffee program and a possible pastry counter. The sandwich menu will borrow from Common Market's other locations with staples like a pimento cheese sandwich and a pulled chicken salad. It's kind of a mini food hall, Mr. Worth said. It's been described as a neighborhood living room. It's a place where everyone can feel comfortable with this development. The Durham location plans to open later this fall. What will she think of next is the question that comes to mind when we learn of Vivian Howard's new enterprise. Quietly, a fridge dropped on Bald Head Island recently might be a window to the food's future. North Carolina chef Vivian Howard started her newest enterprise, a refrigerator stocked with gourmet meals ready to reheat, named Viv's Fridge. The new venture is born out of a pandemic and diners' new relationship with dinner. Mrs. Howard sees a third space opening up between restaurants and the home-cooked meal. Before you've either cooked or you went out, she said, now I think we have a whole other way of eating where restaurants pivot to meal kits. Maybe we don't want to make a full meal, but I understand how to put short ribs in the oven. The first Viv's Fridge landed on Bald Head Island, set up at 6 Maritime Way. The second is set up in front of a restaurant, the chef and the farmer in Kinston. The third will be up and running soon on Emerald Isle. Each is stocked with dishes meant to feed 4 people, including sides, for times when diners need something to go with something on the grill or entire meals. Prices range from $35 to $75. Dishes include tomato pies, beef short ribs, blueberry barbecue chicken, enchiladas, and a slow-roasted pork shoulder taco kit. If she adds more Viv's Fridges with her own dishes, they won't be set up outside eastern North Carolina. Instead, she sees other chefs taking the model and making it their own. It's a totally new paradigm, she said. It's a fun idea, and I think it's a really big idea. A chill box accessible at all hours as technology has been around for a while, selling soft drinks and candy bars. This is not that, Mrs. Howard said. Compare it to a vending machine would be like comparing a flip-flop to a rocket ship. Each of Viv's Fridge holds about $5,000 worth of meals and sides. Customers swipe their credit card any time day or night. The door opens, and scales inside the fridge detect which items are purchased. It's definitely not a vending machine. It's a smart fridge, she said. It operates like a giant mini bar. It's a way of putting more homemade quality food in front of people. We can only ask, what will Vivian Howard think of next? Walmart will no longer sell cigarettes in some of its stores, though tobacco sales can be a significant profit generator. The Wall Street Journal was the first to report this new development. It noted some stores in California, Florida, Arkansas, and New Mexico were on the list. Walmart is not the first national retail chain to cut off cigarette sales, even on a trial basis, but is the largest. Target ended cigarette sales in 1996, and the drugstore chain CVS Health did the same in 2014. decisions about removing cigarettes at Walmart will be made on a store-to-store basis. We're always looking at ways to meet our consumers' needs while still operating an efficient business, the company has said. Health officials say that cigarette smoking causes about 1 in 5 deaths in the United States each year. Walmart, based in Bentonville, Arkansas, announced in 2019 that it was getting out of the vaping business and would stop selling electronic cigarettes at its stores and Sam's Club. It said at the time the decision on growing federal, state, and local regulatory complexity. Anyone who can stop smoking is doing themselves a favor. Headline, Kellogg outgrows Frosted Flakes. Now, what does this mean? It's understandable why Kellogg management wants to ditch cereals to focus on faster-growing snack business. The company has said they would spin off its North American cereals business, home to the mid-20th century marketing icons such as Tony the Tiger and Toucan Sam, with annual sales around $2.4 billion last year. It would also spin off or sell its plant food business, including the Morningstar Farms label. This would leave behind $11.4 billion global snacks, which include brands such as Pringles, Pop-Tarts, and Cheez-It, along with Eggo waffles. This move also makes sense for the plant-based business, which, though profitable, is competing with much more aggressive, unprofitable competition. This leaves the domestic cereal business. Cereal has been a challenged category for many years, as consumer preferences have shifted away from sugary, high-processed carbohydrates for breakfast. Kellogg said it's merely aiming for stable sales in the overall cereal business after the spinoff. Have you eaten cereal for your breakfast lately? Another place to dine? Finally, Fine Folk has a home of its own. The long-awaited Raleigh restaurant opened in late April in the Gateway Plaza Shopping Center, next door to its former residency space, the Bakery Union Special. Fine Folk is the creation of chef and owner Chris Lopez, meant to be a casual restaurant with little something for everyone, packing a menu with nostalgia and adventure. Fine Folk was born out of the early days of the pandemic when Mr. Lopez and John Kleinert built a smashburger-shaped life raft to keep the Cary restaurant Postmaster going. The project, called Government Cheeseburger, specialized in irreverent takes on fast food items. Government Cheeseburger eventually moved out of Postmaster, spending time at the Raleigh Cocktail Bar Foundation before morphing into Fine Folks and settling into Union Special for a while. They were essentially couch surfing for 2 years, and Mr. Lopez said having no place was fun for a while, but it quickly became breathless and frustrating. The restaurant will build in the former Brew Coffee Bar at 2406 Crabtree Boulevard, Suite 100 in Raleigh. It makes you appreciate where we are now, he said. It's awesome to finally have your own space. It definitely feels weird being home again in a permanent spot. The opening menu includes favorites and specials featuring dishes like that may sound familiar, but certainly update the classics. There are starters and snacks like tortellini and spinach and artichoke dips and a beet Waldorf salad. Mr. Lopez has been creating dishes for years, but with the opening of this restaurant, he said he's excited to launch Fine Folks on his terms. The whole thing is kind of crazy, he said. We're never going, really done growing. We're never done learning. I hardly agree with his last statement about continued learning. Unlike things like cars, houses, durable goods like washing machines, we're just sort of an affordable treat even when times are tough. PepsiCo Finance Chief Hugh Johnson said in an interview, PepsiCo has used price increases in recent months to help offset the rising cost of trucking, packaging, and agricultural commodities. It seems like we like our snacks. Corn and soybean prices have risen to near record high prices, signaling higher food prices to come. Global food prices have already reached record highs when Russia invaded Ukraine and jeopardized large slices of the world's grain and oilseed supplies. Poor harvests in South America, inclement planting weather in the U.S., and rising biofuel demand threaten to stretch inventories even thinner and push prices higher. If corn and soybeans go higher, they'll be the latest raw materials to do so in the broadest and sharpest commodities rally of the modern trading era. Vegetable oils, oats, and wheat already reached records in 2022. The rises in prices for corn and soybeans is spilling over into the cost of producing foods ranging from pork chops to Pepsi, eating away at America's purchasing power and another challenge to the post-pandemic economic recovery. Food companies say that shoppers have so far kept up. Analysts say there are signs such as stronger private label sales that show consumers are responding to the pinch. We're told that the average American throws out nearly 40% of the food they buy. This might be the time and place when we attack that problem. When grocery shopping, ask yourself this question as you're looking at it. How and when will I use this particular item? This might be time to plan your menus for the coming week before you go shopping. Those strawberries look very tempting, but can I use them all before they spoil? Sipping a frozen daiquiri, a slushy slurpee, or a big gulp is more than a convenient method of cooling off during the warmer summer months. It is participating in the unusual American custom of consuming iced beverages. Historically, ice was reserved for use outside the glass, and excessive cold beverages were treated with great suspicion. When the first known recipe for cocktails was published in 1833, it called for ice instead of water. By the time the landmark book, The Bartender's Guide, also known as How to Mix Drinks, came out in 1862, the recipe called for ice. They had previously called for water. The author had given special attention to the subject of refrigeration as almost a new art among us, as well as that of aerated waters and other drinks sought after in the summer season. This narrow time range in which ice came into common use in American drinks overcame a prejudice that dates back to ancient times. When it was available, ice was used medically for centuries as an anti-inflammatory against swelling in wounds and broken bones, to reduce muscle spasm, cramping, and the pain of sores and lesions externally, and to reduce fevers both externally and internally. By adding ice and snow directly to wine or water was thought by different cultures to cause colic, convulsions, paralysis, blindness, madness, and sudden death. We've run out of time for today's episode of The Thought for Food. Be sure to listen in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kroger, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138.